Well, I have the honour to be the warm-up man for my colleague and collaborator, Neil Broome. I have to apologise that I've given you a very old-fashioned mode of communication. I tried to make some of the proper trendy coloured PowerPoint slides. I'm soon going to issue a signal to Tehran to slap out a fatwa on Gates, because I certainly couldn't get that bloody PowerPoint of his to work, so I'm sorry. There are some diagrams that I had hoped to show you that will have to wait for another occasion when I may have learned the elements of this modern communication. Well, I do have an exact text, which I will read with just some interpolations, and you should all have a copy of it by now. If you haven't, there are some spare copies on various unoccupied seats. I'm going to have time for questions, and at the start of the question time, would you please show that you want to ask a question so I can do a division in my head and work out how long to talk to each question. My first paragraph, three, will dispose of a topic which fortunately has not arisen at this gathering, but it's bedeviled science and faith discussion in this region of the country for the last decade. A mischievous assumption has been promoted more and more over the past decade or so that if evolution were shown to have occurred, for the sake of argument, that is, proven to be a fact, regardless of whether its mechanism had been adequately discovered, that fact would somehow clash with Christian theology as set forth in the creation stories, plural, never mentioned by our troublesome antagonists, it's plural, of Genesis 1 and 2. The sectarian campaigns on this assumption are of two varieties, both holding that all species were created within a short time, either about 6,000 years ago, young earth, creationism, I always put that in quotation marks, and boy, do they cut up ugly when you insist on doing that. But let me explain, I believe in creation as much as anybody believes in creation, and I refuse to cede the term creation to this sect. I'm for creation. The question is just how has God done it? So either young earth creationism or some billions of years ago old earth creationism. And in both versions, extinctions have occurred, at least 9/10 of all the species that ever existed, but no new species have emerged. Evolution is asserted to be a lie. Now, it's an amusing irony that a fashionable tendency among militant atheists, exemplified by the dreaded depauperate Dawkins, also holds that evolution, if a fact, which of course they believe it is, refutes religion. Isn't that amusing? The creationists, who say they are the Christians, and Dawkins, the militant anti-Christian, they both say that evolution, as a matter of logic, if it's proven to be a fact, refutes religion. They're both wrong, and wrong in different ways, but which I will characterize as both totalitarian. I regard them both as truly menacing tendencies in their different ways. But we'll leave them aside from now on. In order to maximize our chances to foresee the future, we'd better have a good grasp of the past. Rangi Nui Walker, I used to get to talk to my environmental studies class annually, and he would say, "The Maori walks into the future with his back to it." We don't claim to know much about the future, but we say, you had better pay close attention to the past in order to live wisely in the present so as to bring about a better future. Well, I don't think Maoris can claim any sort of monopoly on that idea, but it's a good idea. And one of the reasons why we should take evolution seriously is that principle of how to live in the present. Honour the past, study it, face the facts about it. So my glimpses today of possible devolution, that's in my title as you'll see, are based on a scientific description of evolution, and I wanted to give you a diagram which Art Hoey and I have been developing for a decade, but I'm afraid I haven't been able to master Gates's program. The evolutionary tree of life, which I wanted to show you, but which many of you have seen in various books, consists of forking branches, but also there are some twigs, a smaller number of snapped twigs that have fallen across to graft onto phylogenetically distant branches. Transposons have dominated recent evolution. For example, structures such as compound leaf, common in the New Zealand coastal forest, puriri, titoki, and so on, or our type of eye, have not evolved independently in each of those lines, but have been passed across the tree of life by transposons of one sort or another, mechanisms about which we know rather little. Another good example is the leg hemoglobin in the nodules on the roots of legumes. That's a hemoglobin, the red pigment of your blood. It didn't evolve independently, we don't suppose. Now, I say, if we change the rates, or even worse, the specificities with which genes can jump around in infectious manners, we may wreak biological havoc on a global scale. Go back to Ovid's Metamorphoses to glimpse what might go wrong. But novel pathogens, especially viruses, are the main fear that I'm alluding to, but I won't say much about them, partly because it's much more speculation. In order to bring to you what I'm afraid a lot of you lack, with all due respect, and it's not your fault the media haven't told you, some understanding of gene tampering, I'll mainly talk about GM plants and GM food. Now, there are two books that are being passed around at so far an inadequate rate. You can only look at each one for less than a minute if you think about it, and I'd like you, each of you, to glimpse those books, because they're the two best books that I can refer you to regarding GM food. So please do pass them along and get an idea of what they are, and acquire enough information to tell the relevant librarians to acquisition them. I hold a traditional view of the fall, insofar as I can understand it, and I maintain that those who ignore that doctrine are at risk of repeating in novel ways the rebellion against God, which is the essence of the fall. Of course, there can never be a rerun of the fall. I take it that was a unique event in some real sense. But humans can be tempted to novel misbehaviors similar in kind. I'll argue that gene tampering should offend well-informed Christians as an interference with evolution of a kind similar to the fall of Genesis 3, and liable to bring about devolution, novel mayhem in the biosphere. Let me insert here, I was a full-time student for a decade, and I then became a full-time teacher of biochemistry, and for the last decade in retirement, I have worked mainly on gene tampering, using the internet and promulgating to more or less whoever wants to hear about it, what is on the whole bad news. Needless to say, a lot of people don't want to hear bad news, but I'm challenging you to face up to it. I say a wide range of scientists should speak out for much stricter control of gene tampering because it is based on dud science, quite aside from its highly dubious ethics. The abbreviations I'll use variously, GE or GM, are equivalent, but the term genetic engineering is a kind of insult to real engineering. As you'll gather, it hardly deserves the epithet engineering. And GM is a better abbreviation, I think, slightly easier to say, and of course can stand for genetic manipulation, contrary to the propagandistic term modification, which has a sort of soothing style to it. Professor Richard Stroman, one of my mentors at Berkeley, pointed out in a sporadic small series of articles in Nature Biotechnology, the prestige journal of the gene tamperers, many defects in the Lego model of biology which informs the gene tampering trade. Dogma, long refuted, is crucial among the axioms of the gene jiggerers. For example, one gene, one protein. As long as you've got a sequence of bases in DNA that code for this particular protein, slam that into whatever genome you think you can get it into, and it'll cause that protein to be made. Well, that model of gene expression is thoroughly out of date, and the reasons why that is so, I haven't got time to go into, but please take my word for it, it is thoroughly out of date. For one thing, there's only 26,000 genes in the human and falling, whereas in human milk, there are about 100,000 proteins. Just in that one tissue, milk, there are about 100,000 proteins. Well, how do you get that with only 26,000 genes if the one gene, one protein model is true? Then there's their slogan, only four letters in the DNA code, stated by top-level gene jockeys and well-known for four decades to be false. There are other bases in DNA, methyl G, methyl C more famously, and others not normally mentioned. Instead, what is inserted into the target cells is always synthesized polymers based on the slogan, only four letters in the DNA code. The big four rule, okay, and the synthetic DNA that's inserted in gene tampering is always just made of only four bases. The minor bases are assumed to have no function, not a scientific assumption. And I could go on with a list of their false axioms. Now, the main characteristic of their set of slogans is that they're scientific drivel. And I've given you a copy of the Schubert letter, and I have some extra copies of it for those who appreciate proper cell biology and want to favour fellow scientists with copies. That's just one page out of Nature Biotechnology, and that is proper science and constitutes a devastating attack on GM food, no less. By a person I'll tell you a bit about. David Schubert is a high flyer professor at the Salk Institute in La Jolla, California. He used to lunch weekly with Crick. I don't envy him that, but that'll give you some idea of his status. And the National Science Foundation for some years circulated one of his grant applications as a model of how to do a scientific grant application. David Schubert is not just some other cell biologist. He is a high flyer, and what he says there is unimpeachable. I know, I helped him to edit it. And it then occasioned an enraged letter, which we'll come to immediately, to the same journal. So he's attacking there the idea that you could make safe food by the methods of making GM plants that have been used so far. Let me just sketch those, and again I apologize for not having colored diagrams. There are two main methods. They're normally carried out on a lawn of millions of plant cells in a petri dish or similar, and you can either infect the plant cells with what originates in the only known tumor of the plant kingdom, Agrobacterium tumefaciens, is a bacterium that causes tumors on plants, the crown gall tumor. And it turns out that that is instrumentally mediated by a plasmid, a little two-strand DNA circle in the cytoplasm of that bacterium. And modified synthetic T plasmids can infect plant cells carrying in whatever genes you wish to have carried in. For example, a gene for resistance to the herbicide brand name Roundup, generic name glyphosate. And guess who the main manufacturer of Roundup is? Yes, it's the same Monsanto who have been the pioneers at St. Louis and especially the university near there. I know because my first graduate student made his name working there on gene tampering. He hasn't been in touch with me lately. He doesn't answer when I send him friendly messages. So that's one way. You can infect plant cells with modified T plasmids to carry in whatever gene you think would be commercially valuable. That's the point, of course. Or the other way, which I never would have given a penny for funding, but it works, oddly enough, biolistics. Simon de Rolls of the CRI in Palmas North made one of these machines for 15 grand. The commercial one's over 100 grand. A little puff of helium blasts at your lawn of plant cells little tiny birdshot pellets, much smaller than the cells, platinum or palladium, heavy metal, coated with the synthetic DNA that you want to be incorporated into that type of plant cell, and you then grow those cells. Now, in both methods, the majority of the target cells are killed, the majority by a big margin, And of the survivors, the majority are obviously monsters, embarrassingly disposed of, I hope, after thorough killing, though I know of one lab where that has not always been done. And then among the survivors that aren't obviously monsters, you have a gene that you put in next to the structural gene that you really want, an antibiotic resistance gene, and you then find cells that will grow in the presence of that antibiotic, and they very probably have got the gene that you wanted to be taken in. For example, a gene coding for a modified version of the CRISPR protein characteristic of the crown jewel in organic horticulture, Bacillus thuringiensis. That's a whole organism herbicide used by advanced organic horticulture when the insects in question are out of hand, other methods have failed, and you spray with this whole organism herbicide, and the crystal proteins produced by that bacterium do kill caterpillars, which are cheeky enough to eat that crop, by wrecking the lining of their gut. Well, modified versions of that crystal protein, very modified, are the basis of the other main category of commercial GM crop. Well, if you think that slapping in randomly, there's no control over where the foreign DNA gets inserted in the target genome, no control, shotgun. If you think that slapping in randomly a few genes by these radically unnatural processes, not reminiscent of anything in nature except slightly viral infection with the T plasmids, if you think that has more predictable effects than offering a whole genome of 10 to the 4th or 10 to the 5th genes in breeding, well, that assumption's wrong for the main reason that it assumes natural crosses to be random, or nearly so. We know admittedly very little about the natural barriers to error in breeding. That doesn't prove they're unreal or random. A top-level affirmation of the false randomness assumption was stated by main Monsanto-connected gene jockeys Roger Beachy, Wayne Parrott, Ed Bulk in their Nature Biotech November 2002, enraged response to the Schubert letter. And here's a quote which I do ask you to ponder. Take it away with you. The reality is that unintentional consequences, I don't know why that's in quotes, are much more likely to occur in nature than in biotechnology. Their euphemism for gene tampering. They've appropriated this much wider term, biotechnology, which includes brewing, just to mean their modern stuff. Unintentional consequences are much more likely to occur in nature than in biotechnology because nature relies on the unintentional consequences of blind, random genetic mutation and rearrangement to produce adaptive phenotypic results. Whereas GM technology employs precise, specific, and rationally designed genetic modification toward a specific engineering goal. That's the authorities. It's not me. I'm not inferring what they think. They say that that's what they think, and they say it with Dawkins and many other militant atheists, right? Nature is blind and random. That's real evolution. No plan in evolution. Blind and random. Whereas they claim to be precise and specific. Well, what's so precise and specific or rational about GM as done so far? The answer is very little indeed. Now, I'm going to outline a very clear example of how such effects can cause harm. This is just a memento. There are no pills in this bottle, but just pass that around as a kind of nostalgia for when you could buy over the counter the natural amino acid as a food supplement, L-tryptophan. Now, I formed up an international team early this century to go into the following case in thorough detail, and we have done so on the basis of the whole public record and have sent the resulting scientific paper to the journals that would occur to you as relevant. It comes back like a mortar bomb. None of this, oh, we've sent it to referees and here are their comments. Just forget it. Don't bother us with such a story. Well, here's the pop version of it, but I can assure you I know all about this episode. I've made it my business with international team of experts. The thalidomide of genetic, quote, engineering. By the end of the 1980s, some millions of people, mostly in North America, were supplementing their diet with L-tryptophan, an essential amino acid present in proteins of any normal diet. Amino acids such as tryptophan are routinely produced in microbreweries using suitable microbial cultures. One producer, Showa Denko, a partner in the original Comalco rort, a big Japanese company, artificially inserted genes into a bacterial species to increase its production of tryptophan. Then in late 1989, some 5 or 10,000 people, mainly in North America, fell ill with a highly unusual illness, EMS, eosinophilia myalgia syndrome. I've corresponded for years with some of the survivors of this epidemic, and I can tell you they have a very nasty life. Reptilian-type skin. Pains in the big muscles, that's a myalgia. Mental harm of various categories. These eosinophils are a class of white blood cell stained by eosine. They increase 3 or 4 orders of magnitude and invade your own body in various parts. And depending on the luck of the draw, you get serious illness in different parts of the body. Well, luckily, this was a new illness. If this Showa Denko tryptophan had only caused cancer or severe mental retardation or other common condition, we still wouldn't know about it. Same with thalidomide. It was very lucky that it caused a condition that most medics don't see in their whole career, the lack of the long bones in the big limbs, seal limb. If thalidomide had only caused a common illness such as asthma, we still wouldn't know about it. Same with EMS. It was a new syndrome and therefore got noticed. Impurities in Showa Denko's genetically engineered tryptophan caused the illness. There were 6 other manufacturers. None of them were using GM bacilli. None of their tryptophan caused it. And in a nice detective exercise, the Centers for Disease Control tracked it down. And although Showa Denko have never admitted liability, they have paid out $2,000 million to settle out of court about 2,000 lawsuits for damages. Well, why did they settle out of court at about $1 million a throw if they didn't really think they were going to lose in the trial? I suppose they would have lost. So there's the story with references, and you can get that story as I've written it there at the URL that I give. Please pass it around. Nobody has challenged it. It's the truth, and it should be taken to heart. So if a better than 99% pure food-grade chemical can kill 100 or 200 people and maim some thousands, what do you think about a whole potato genetically engineered to include a modified version of the skin toxin of the African clawed toad, Tony Connor of Lincoln's dream? He's been at it for a decade, nothing to show so far, but he's trying to do that. And he fed some GM potatoes to delegates at a conference in Nelson without their knowledge. This is the gene jockey's idea of ethics. So nature is extremely orderly, and I'm saying if you think like Dawkins that nature is just the result of the outworkings of physics and chemistry, then you could fairly easily assume that even randomly inserted cassettes of genes, some from foreign kingdoms, bacterial genes into plants, for example, that's no more likely than breeding to cause harm. If, on the other hand, you believe, to take a specific case, that an apple is not just a random collection of biochemicals, but a creation of a benign creator, and that Grandmother Smith in a Sydney suburb was a humble agent of that creator, selecting a new mutant, a green apple, that had arrived according to his rules, then you'll contrast such natural processes with the overwhelming of natural barriers to slam in viral promoters joined on to synthetic approximate copies of bacterial genes by biolistics or modified T plasmids. Violent processes expected to disrupt the target genome, as indeed it turns out to do. So I'm saying that the attitude behind that kind of misbehavior has a lot in common with what Adam and Eve did, whenever it was exactly. I'll leave you with the rest of the text to digest, and I'll just remark that the context within which this most dangerous technology of all history is not being controlled, the context in which our species is so radically lapsing in ethics is, of course, the dominance of the PC axis. Women's lib, so misleadingly called feminism, the new racism, and, of course, militant homosexuality. That the PC axis, those are the dominant ideologies of Helen Clark, Margaret Wilson, and you can make a very long list of offenders if you care to face up to it. That set of three ideologies dominates our way of life, and that is the context in which we are failing to control this most dangerous of technologies. Also, of course, we're pretending that parental guidance is out of date and that traditional non-injurious methods of parental guidance are somehow superseded by the ideologues of the PC axis. The wider context, of course, is militant materialism, Drongo atheism, Dawkins being only the most visible and embarrassing example. And sorry to be so incorrect as to mention it, but I don't consider myself particularly brave. Militant Islam. You better face up to that if you want to deal with the modern world with any hope of success. So those who disbelieve in the existence of Satan are maximally susceptible to temptation and fall. And, of course, materialists disbelieve in the existence of Satan, and I haven't heard him mentioned much in Christian arenas lately. Well, let's just mention him from time to time and give children the screw tape letters by C.S. Lewis. Thank you. If you put up your hands if you wish to ask a question, then I can gauge how much time to spend on each question. Yes.
How much of our food is already affected by GM insertions?
In this country, very little. The corporation Greenpeace will give you a list. That's the one thing they've done about it, and it's fine as far as it goes. It's mainly processed food and mainly within that, soybean extracts. The majority of the soybeans grown in the USA and Argentina and more Brazil are GM soybeans of unknown composition, and various extracts are made from soybeans, oils, and various refined mixtures. So anything with soy extracts, if you want to be completely safe, steer clear of them. It doesn't arise in any sensible mode of life. You grow most of your own food anyway, and we're not confronted with much GM food in this country, which is not a fluke. It's a result of an active movement, a rather incoherent movement. But some of the field trials have been uprooted, as you may have noticed, and it's been made clear they better not try it on here, even as field trials, let alone open release, as rife in North America and Argentina. Russell. Yes, that's a real good hypothetical. There's a large list of them on the Federated Farmers website. I don't have time to recite them. Or would you support GM if it increased the yields of your farming? All these hopes confused by insinuation with reality. There are very few GM experiments which show any medical promise. Some have been damaging to the patients and have had to be discontinued. And by and large, GM shows very little promise. But it is true that human growth hormone is made in GM microbes. And as long as the labs properly run and so on, I don't see any objection to that. And by and large, the people who criticize GM are not criticizing the labs. The Royal Commission on GM did recommend that the regulations for the contained labs be reviewed, recommendation 6.2, and that has not been done, and I think it ought to be done, but by and large, it's the medical experiments are not the biggest priority. They were when it was invented in the mid-70s. Escape of dangerous microbes from the labs was the primary concern, if you read The New Scientist back then, but it's faded from concern lately, which I'm sorry about, because, you see, if such experiments are being conducted by people who think that fear of GM is absurd, then they won't be very diligent in their containment procedures. And needless to say, it's the procedures, not the equipment, that matter. Yes. 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 Correct. Yes, that's correct. That happened. Yes. Bt, Bacillus thuringiensis, as I mentioned, those crystalline proteins are actually not the natural ones. They are considerably modified in more ways than one. And versions of that were tried by the Crown Research Institute, then called Crop and Food near Lincoln, and they didn't honour the terms of the permit. They allowed the plants to flower, which was prohibited, and they were embarrassed and have had to stop that experiment. It wasn't promising anyway. I think in private they were glad to stop it because they had nothing to show for it. Oh, yes, yes. Something like $200 million have been poured down the GM rat hole in this little country. It's very hard to get a total, but it's in that region. Well, a very well-informed question. What do you think the Yanks have been doing for about 25 years? They've got some real Lulus in the labs, but they, of course, are keeping them contained. Yes, and as a matter of fact, not to be alarmist, but this new influenza virus, which doesn't affect people over 60, according to the Daily Mail, so many of us here needn't worry about it, but this new flu virus does have aspects in its composition that suggest it's of artificial origin rather than just the result of a natural mutation. We may never know, but it looks as though it may be a lab compilation that got loose. It is even possible that it got loose deliberately so that the people that sell vaccines for it could really cash in. Harold. Oh, well, thank you for raising that. And the answer is to contrast totally. The famous Professor Elliott, who, let me declare, is a good old friend of mine, has been conducting for a couple of decades experiments, nothing to do with gene tampering, implanting, floating in the peritoneal liquid, something like a tea bag, which is retrievable should any emergency arise, coated cells from the pancreas of Auckland Island pigs, which are remarkably free of viruses in the first place, and every one of those volunteer patients, and boy, this is informed consent. These are people who are heading into blindness, gangrene in the extremities, and so on. Type 1 diabetes will kill you if not treated, and they die young even with modern treatment. And the idea of trickling, in this case it's pig insulin, but that's been injected into people for decades, trickling that into the peritoneal liquid so as to decrease or abolish the requirement for injecting insulin and give people a much more even insulin supply. The first couple of dozen were treated a decade ago, and boy, they were happy as the day is long, and testified to the committee of the parliament that ran through a special law to send them offshore. In case you want to face up to what's happening, this is the next clawing up from what was done to Herb Green. Green was unpopular in the same way that the captain of a warship is normally unpopular. If you're running a hospital like that with insufficient staff, you'll be unpopular. Doesn't mean you do anything wrong. Elliot was very popular, and when they were able to claw him down and stop by a sneaky special act of parliament, the next round of volunteers for the improved pig cell implants, that was just another victory in the insane feminazi sex war, which, in case you hadn't noticed, is very important in our decadent way of life. So I say devolution is happening. Evolution has gone on for a long time. Devolution is happening very rapidly. Face up to it. At least you'll die more content with the satisfaction of some understanding.